And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have a great show tonight with guest Jeremy Corbell, and he's an investigative filmmaker. Well, before that, we have Alejandro Rojas, and he's going to be there with the latest UFO news coming up. And if you're listening live, please head over to podcastufo.com and sign into our easy sign-in chat room. Again, I always want to thank supporters for just as little as a dollar a month. You can help support us. And if you're not able to, we still appreciate each and every one of you regardless. A little shout out to a couple of people that help, like Alan S. or Bill E., Bruce F., James R., Bobby Hernandez. I'm saying his whole name because he hung out with me in North Carolina, so I feel like I can say his full name. We have a Aaron B. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And we're going to quickly draw for a $10 supporter a month or more t-shirt. Hang on. We have Kathy M. She wins. All right. Well, that's enough of my shenanigans. It's time to bring on the one and the only Alejandro Ufologist Rojas.
Oompa Loompa.
I was getting you back for on your show. Adding the middle name.
Yeah. Well, that's a custom on my show to add the middle name. So it sounds like you're adopting that. You also did a bit of, which we did on our show a lot, of the kind of a Seinfeld hello at the beginning.
Oh, I did.
Hello.
That's almost like Mrs. Doubtfire hello.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, that was hello. Yeah.
But I guess if our shows start to get very similar, I don't think people are going to mind because they'll get the shows twice.
That's right. Well, you know, I've only had one kind of complaint about that, and really it is we always have to watch our guests because sometimes our guests can almost overlap, and I don't think we ever do that on purpose. You know, it just happens. So,
in fact, there's times where I'll try to be sure that, you know, it's someone different.
You know what? I've started listening to your show, and I'm finding it quite enjoyable.
Really?
Yeah, I'm almost thinking about just giving up this show and just listening to your show.
Okay.
No.
Now people like to have both of them going.
That's right. No.
A lot of times there are times where, you know, go to shows or something and people will be like, "Oh, yeah, I heard you on Martin's show." And I have had some feedback. I usually don't pay attention much to feedback, mostly because I'm too busy writing stories and everything. But there were a few people that were, of course, sad that Jason was gone from our show, but happy that you're going to be joining me on a weekly basis. So that's cool.
Yeah, I bet a lot of people, you know, really will miss Jason. I listened to a number of shows in the past, and he was good. He did a good job.
Yeah. He's a funny little feller.
Yeah, he is. He is funny. All right, so what do we have going on for news this week?
All right, well, we have a sighting that was posted by Roger Marsh, another MUFON sighting on the site. And he says that this was seen on May 25th at about 10:30 p.m. It was seen over the I-75 highway in Michigan near Hazel Park. And this witness says they saw something that was oblong horizontally, they say, and the edges had pieces that appeared to be sticking out from it. So the object they felt was kind of strange looking, even though it was mostly kind of an orangish-reddish light. That was an orange light flying through the sky. The person said, First, they thought maybe that it was a Chinese lantern, but then they changed their mind for a couple of reasons. Those reasons being, let me scroll down here to read these, is that, first of all, it was too large, they said, to be a Chinese lantern. Also, that it moved too far and fast, and that it didn't have smooth, round edges. So the person estimated that the object was 300 feet away. That's pretty close.
Right.
They did get a video from their cell phone, and it doesn't appear to be a very close object. In fact, unfortunately, on the video, all you can see is this small point of light off in the distance, so you can't really make much out of it. But an interesting sighting.
Now, when they say this thing had weird, like, structure or edges or something like that, if the video didn't come out very good, did they draw a picture of it? Are you aware of that?
It did not come along with the MUFON report. So they didn't draw and submit a sighting. See, now, this is one of the things. Roger Marsh, when he posts his stories typically, he is posting them when they're posted onto the MUFON website so that we could get, you know, quickly some of the sightings that are out there. Now, what will happen, and it can take a long time, is that a MUFON investigator will contact the witness, and then perhaps if they feel it's warranted, then they'll meet with the witness and perhaps get some drawings and things like that. Then they'll write up a report and submit it. That could take a month, two. A long period of time. They like the reports to be completed within 90 days. So it can take some time. And then once they're submitted, you know, then Roger never knows when they're submitted. So sometimes he'll have to go back and look to see what reports were finished up and what the results were. So it takes some time to get that sort of thing. So perhaps in the future, if this after investigation proves to be remain an unknown object, he'll get some drawings or something like that. But thus far, there are no drawings that were included.
Yeah, I'm always interested in the different shaped craft when something, you know, is unusual compared to what you usually hear they look like.
And yeah, for sure.
Sounds like one of those.
And it can be hard, though. I mean, because your eyes, especially at night, also, you know, everybody sees this, kind of the starlight effect where, you know, it seems to not be a point of light when it actually is. So sometimes those can be illusions.
Right, right. So what else is happening?
What's happening? Well, this is kind of interesting. Skrillex, you heard of this dude?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got this kind of wild haircut. And I first heard about Skrillex from Travis Walton, because Travis Walton said he went to this guy's birthday party in Malibu and that there were lots of stars there. So I was like, what the heck? Who is this guy? Turns out he's an electronic dance music guy who's really into UFOs and aliens and stuff. And supposedly, I guess he had a dream at least that he believes might be really related to alien contact or there are aliens in this dream. And somehow he got this idea from this dream to share images of the Earth from satellites. Maybe it was from. Maybe he was in a UFO flying around, and he looked out the window and said, "Hey, that looks cool. There should be some wallpaper like that."
So he actually came up with this idea from a dream.
Yeah, from a dream about aliens. Somehow he doesn't go into detail, but this is information that was written on a website called PSFK that keeps up on technology. And it's based off of something that Google just released that they worked with Skrillex with. Google released some Android phone cases. And with the phone cases, you get this wallpaper. And this wallpaper beams to your phone live images from satellites. So pretty cool. I mean, that's a good idea for wallpaper, I think.
Oh, it's awesome.
It also comes with an app where you get Skrillex music, you get the album before it comes out, all of this cool Skrillex stuff if you're into it. Skrillex is really into aliens, like I said, so he has lots of alien imagery in his artwork. So it's kind of cool. And, yeah, Travis said that at the last birthday party he had that Giorgio Tsoukalos was there. Let's see, who else? Corey Feldman.
Oh, yeah.
Craig Robinson. I don't know who that is. Tony Hawk. He's a skateboarder guy. Mm-hmm. Ryan Cabrera. I'm not sure who that is. Gary Busey. Everybody knows
boy.
Who Gary Busey is.
Yeah, he's nuts as can be. I love the guy.
Yeah. And Tara Reid.
Oh, yeah. from American
Famous
Pie.
Famous for, you know, that. I think, yeah. Sharknado.
Oh, is that right? Now,
I think she's in Sharknado.
You know, Skrillex, that seems that's a real good alien name if you think about it.
It is. That's a really good point. And maybe, I don't know where the name derives from. Maybe from the alien dream.
Could be. But, you know, I mean, how do we know, you know, with the haircut and everything, how do we know he's not an alien?
It's entirely possible. I think that probable. In fact, if we ask the Roswell slides people, I'm sure they'll be able to find some goofball scientist who will be able to claim that Skrillex is an alien.
As long as they can do it from a photo.
Yeah, if we send them a photo of Skrillex.
Zing.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the last story today?
The last story has to do with your girlfriend.
Oh.
She is an alien. I sent a picture to the Roswell people. And no, actually, it does because, and I know this because you told me about this on my show, but it has to do with a Russian UFO video. So the UK media picked up on this Russian UFO video. And, you know, they post it without doing research because they're really terrible at doing investigative journalism. And they assume that this video was recent because it did go up on YouTube and said Russian UFO 2015. But if they would have done a little bit of research, they would have found that this video actually comes from 2013. And furthermore, that the UFOs in this video were also seen over St. Petersburg in 2012. And there's some other videos posted there as well. So although the video isn't from 2015, it's a very interesting video. It does show these lights, these points of light, and it's not quite dark out. It's kind of like twilight, and they're kind of in a cluster floating up there in the air in all of these videos, and so you could see those in our story. So it's kind of weird. There's people who are adamant that these are flares. Some people have suggested Chinese lanterns. I'm kind of thinking I could see how they might be flares, but you made some arguments as how to why they might not be.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's no way they're Chinese lanterns because they're just way too bright. They're super bright. And then the other argument I made is that, one I didn't think of at the time is why were they staying so still? There's absolutely no fall in them. Do new type of technology flares stay in one place, or do they actually float toward the ground?
Well, here's the thing, and I've got video that I posted with this story that I've taken of flares because I used to see flares a lot here by my home in the Goldwater Range, the same area where the flares were supposedly dropped at 10 p.m. The night of the Phoenix Lights for some reason. But they do – when they're really far off like these are, like Goldwater is like 60, 80 miles away from me. And surprisingly, you see these things just like in this video, super bright. But they're so far away, and I guess they're on parachutes. You don't see flame. You don't see smoke. You don't see parachutes. And they don't seem to be dropping at all. They seem to be just still there in the air. So I think they drop at such a low rate that they don't appear to be dropping at all unless you have some sort of reference point, something on the ground next to them, which often you don't when they're in the air. So, yeah, they can look like they're standing still.
Okay. Well, they're most likely flares. I have to admit that. You know, it was kind of puzzling to me. A couple things are puzzling. One is, yes, the ones in St. Petersburg look exactly like them. And would they actually drop flares over St. Petersburg? That's another question. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, these were like almost daylight or early twilight. And that just was kind of puzzling. You didn't see any plane. They did go out around three quarters of the way through. And then there was another sighting over to the left. He's actually, one of them is yelling in Russian, look to the left. And you could barely see some over there. And then the ones to the right come back exactly in the same place, and they appear to be in exactly the same cluster after they went out. So it's, to me, it's kind of puzzling. Maybe it is just flares, but if so, you know, there was just a couple of those questions I had.
Yeah, I was feeling pretty confident that they were flares early on because I've seen them in clusters like this before. But you certainly gave me some things to think about, like when you mentioned, you know, your girlfriend translated the video and was able to cure those things, but also that it's Twilight. And that is very strange because it seems that flares aren't going to be very effective at Twilight to light up the ground. So I don't know why they would be doing that unless maybe they're just practicing the dropping of them and not using them to light the ground. So I don't know. They are kind of weird. People should definitely take a look at the videos. I think they're pretty striking. And it's interesting that they should be happening in these populated areas.
That's right. Yeah, I do suggest to take a look at the video because it is intriguing. And you can find that in our show notes on Podcast UFO, which will link over to openminds.tv. Well, I guess that'll do it. And thanks a lot, Alejandro.
My pleasure.
And we'll be talking to you twice next week again. And hang in, everyone. We're going to be right back after the music break with Jeremy Corbell. Jeremy Corbell, how are you?
I'm good, Martin. How are you doing?
Good. I always worry that someone's going to forget to turn off their mute. thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
I was excited to meet you out in Phoenix back in February. I watched a film you did, and I thought you did an excellent job on it in many ways, very artistically filmed and everything about it. So I thought you did a really good job, and I'm excited to see what else you do as time goes on. Why don't you fill in the listening audience of actually who you are, and just as importantly, as what intrigued you in the beginning of this subject?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a pretty easy question to answer. So basically, I am Jeremy Corbell. I started into this field probably the same way anybody starts, just out of sheer curiosity. Specifically, the moment I remember is I was 13 years old, and somehow I heard on the radio the voice of Bob Lazar, John Lear, Gene Huff, and George Knapp. And that was an amazing moment because that was back in 1989 when Bob Lazar was coming forward and telling his story. And at that time, the way he described the propulsion system, it was so counterintuitive to what we know of traditional or classic propulsion systems that it literally, I mean, I like to say it weaponized my curiosity. It did. It made me want to know more. It expanded my imagination and allowed me to kind of look into this because in a way, it just made sense. If things are traversing or objects are traversing space-time, gravity amplification or the warping of gravity seems like the logical way in which that would be happening. So even as a young kid, this is how it all started for me. It was just simply hearing a story. I mean, I didn't have a sighting or something powerful like that. I wish I had, but I hadn't. But more than anything, it was just the way that the propulsion system was described that was absolutely fascinating. So that's how I started. That is not the path that I took for the majority of my life. This is a more recent endeavor for me where I've dedicated, you know, my livelihood, my life, and all of my time to this for the last 6 years.
So 6 years. And so you're fairly young in 1989 when you and did you actually hear that show live?
I don't remember how I heard the show specifically, but I just remember hearing it. And I remember being about 13 years old. And it was something that I remember affected me. I mean, it was really, you know, you go around running around telling your friends, oh my gosh, I finally heard something that makes sense. I think there's probably ET life visiting the planet. And people are like, you know, back at that time, people are like, what are you talking about? Nowadays, you know, everybody's hip with the exoplanets in the Goldilocks zone. I mean, the skeptics are pretending like they made it up themselves. It's absolutely incredible. The paradigm has shifted within human consciousness to the point where what we were laughing about, you know, 20 years ago is commonly accepted by the majority of people on the planet today. It makes you wonder what the second question that will be answered in 20 years is. You know, I have theories, but yeah, it's a different world now.
You know, it's a lot of times when the subject comes up, and it did recently when I was talking to an executive about a whole different matter. I said I had to do a show. He said, what show? And I said, well, it's on UFOs. And he looks at me and he said, you believe in those things? And I said, well, I don't know if belief in them. I said, something is going on. I just don't know what it is, and I don't think anyone really knows 100% sure what it is. You know, that type of thing. But I like that when a lot of people say, you believe in, like, it already, it's like a connotation that they're going to, you know, it's a bad thing.
Right. It's amazing. That's why I've called my, you know, my investigative series, Extraordinary Beliefs. It was essentially to kind of reel people in saying, okay, if you want to call it a belief, then we'll call it an extraordinary belief. I no longer have the luxury of disbelief. But the point is, it's a ruse because it's either true or it's not true. This has nothing to do with belief. There's either craft that's visiting Earth from another intelligence from somewhere other than Earth itself, or it's not true. It's one or the other. You know, it's not a matter of belief. It's fact or it's fiction. All of the evidence is extremely weighty that it is fact. I mean, you know, you mm-hmm. talk to anybody who's had access to military programs. I mean, current active military individuals at the highest ranking levels that I've ever had contact with have told me, deadpan, straightforward, not for me to share specifics with anybody else, but have told me, yes, we are being engaged, and we track these on a daily basis with a multitude of different types of radar. And it's just a fact. Our airspace is being, you know, traversed from vehicles of highly advanced origin that are non-terrestrial and non-human. And if that's true, I mean, I'm as curious as you. I want to know more, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, you wonder, I just think a lot of times, you know, in my lifetime, I would love to know actually the answer, if there is an answer. And one of the things I've said a number of times, and I kind of repeat myself a little bit here and there, but it might be something that we haven't even thought of yet, you know, this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. I am with you on that 100%. The deeper I go into this, the more I realize that this cosmic game or whatever it is that's going on, it is not as simple as we make it. It cannot simply be, you know, craft from other intelligences that live in other solar systems within the Milky Way galaxy or beyond. I mean, it just cannot. It's too bizarre. It's too strange. It's unfathomable. So I'm with you. I'm kind of like go old school Jacques Vallée style. There is something else going on. Most likely, it seems that there is a I don't even know if I'd call it an education program like Vallée would say, but it's some sort of it appears to me that whatever's going on is far beyond vehicles coming from other star systems. That's all I'm comfortable saying because I'm as lost mm-hmm. as you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now let's talk quickly about your website. We'll bring that up a few times, but sure. I actually like the name of it, extraordinarybeliefs.com.
Yeah.
And on that website, one of the favorite spots I found today was your favorite UFO quotes. Because a lot of them I had never heard before or seen before. And interesting quotes, and they date all the way back, you know, to the 40s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's presidents, there's how long did it take you to compile that list? It's a great list.
Thanks, man. You know what? That was just over a long time. And, you know, I've tried to kind of validate. There's so many quotes on there that I had that were amazing, but I could not trace them back. So I would say, you know, the majority of what you find there, I've been able to kind of validate in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, I reserve the right to take any out of there, but the majority, you know, I did work on them. I didn't just like copy and paste from the internet. You know, I would find quotes, try to find the origins of them. So I can stand behind most of them, but I'm willing to be wrong. But what was your favorite quote?
Let's see. It's one I've heard before. And the Twining memo. I always
Very
thought that
first
was a really
one,
good
one. Right?
Is that the first one?
The UFO phenomenon being reported is something real and not visionary or fictitious. That's General Nathan Twining, and that was from a memorandum, so that one I actually have a date for. I feel like that is a real quote, but a lot of these are pretty, you know, do your research, and please, audience listening, tell me if I missed a good one or if one of them is not right.
Yeah, yeah. Then the flying saucer situation is not at all imaginary. That was all the way back in 1847.
Well, I mean, look, this phenomenon that we call the UFO phenomenon, which I think is a really, like, narrow way to look at it, but this experience that we're having as humans, where there appears to be other intelligences communicating with humanity, I mean, it dates back to the beginning of recorded human history. I mean, we all know that. We've all been exposed to ancient alien theories and all of this. I mean, even, you know, Christopher Columbus has documented in his journals, you know, U.S. SOs, which are not talked about, but were some of the first sightings ever recorded. So, I mean, most of the planet is water, and if these things usually and actually use gravitational propulsion systems, then it wouldn't matter if they were traversing water or air or up in outer space. It would be the same to them because they're creating an artificial field. So if any of this is true, you know, the place I would hide is, you know, where most of the planet is, which is water. So USOs, because it's hard to study, is one of the most interesting, you know, parts of this phenomenon.
Yes. Recently, I was looking for a guest. Actually, I haven't had anyone really talk on that subject. I know there are a few people out there, but I am looking to get a guest on the show that will talk exclusively about that. That is fascinating.
Yeah, my mentor, George Knapp, and, you know, with a lot of gratitude, I'm able to call him my mentor. You know, he has helped me incredibly, as he likes to say, separating, you know, the wheat from the chaff and trying to figure out what the pitfalls are, how to, you know, vet in individuals and information. I mellhe's straight up called Nellis Air Force Base, you know, to help, you know, figure something out for me. I mean, this guy's amazing. So I model my investigations after him, and, you know, one day I hope that I'm half as good as him. But, you know, essentially, he had somebody on about USOs on Coast to Coast the other night, and it was fascinating. I mean, the guy wrote a whole book on USOs.
Oh, I'm going to have to check out who that is. But if he was just on, you know, it probably wouldn't work. But anyway, I agree about George Knapp. I think he's top shelf. I really respect him, highly respect him. He has almost been on the show like 10 times now. He's like, you know, he's a busy guy.
He's the busiest man on the planet. I mean, I don't know this guy. I mean, I've seen him in action. You know, he is the busiest man on the planet. But, you know, the thing about George Knapp is that he has the absolute 100%. I mean, look, we're talking about a 2-time Peabody Award winning, 24 Emmy'd journalist, you know, for excellence in journalism. And those stories were not about UFOs. I mean, maybe one of them was. But the point is, he is an incredible investigative journalist to begin with. And the fact that he will openly and honestly investigate all of these, you know, phenomena and report on them. I mean, I don't know if you can cuss on your show, but he's got, you know, he's a strong dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're getting, since we're talking about George Knapp, I watched your film last night, Lazar, on your website. I rented it and watched it, and I also read your blog on I don't know if it was a confrontation or at the conference. I missed it anyway. I had to come back early. I guess it was the night. It wasn't a debate. It was like a panel discussion.
And, oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Bob Lazar has been one of those cases that, and I just told you how I felt about George Knapp. And I know George Knapp basically stands behind the Lazar story. But there's a lot of questions when
well,
it comes to...
He stands behind what he's reported on. Of course there's a lot of questions. Let's take a step back for a second.
Okay.
Not to cut you off, just let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, there's no confrontation. There is a legitimate debate that is going on right now about the Lazar story, which there should be a healthy debate. That debate, I guess, is between Stanton Friedman and myself. I feel that over the last 25 years that Stanton has decided to ignore evidence that has been brought forward because it suits his engineered ideas. Now, this is not bad-mouthing Stanton. This is just simply my perspective. I think that there's more to the story than is being accepted and being propagated. Just because Stanton goes out there and is unopposed doesn't make him right. You know, he's not judge, jury, and executioner for all things Lazar. He's a guy that spent a little time looking at it. But as we know, George Knapp has spent 25 years relentlessly digging up the story. If you spend the smallest amount of time looking at the actual words that Bob Lazar has said and trying to understand what he truly conveyed, then you may have a different opinion on just all, you know, all of a sudden shutting out the idea that he's telling you the truth. I find there's more misconceptions about the Lazar story than any other UFO story on the planet. So just to get to the basics of it.
Yeah, Rendlesham Forest, I think, is one of them that's not too far away from that either, just there's a lot of controversy in that. So one of the things that I thought was very condemning, I guess I would say, but I can't find any information on it. I heard it somewhere at one time, so it's not, you know, good evidence. But what I had heard was that Bob was being interviewed, and someone said to him, "Well, Bob, I went to MIT. What is the square right outside of MIT?" And everyone knows it's Kenmore Square, and Bob Lazar did not know. And if you went to MIT, you step out of the door, and there's Kenmore Square right there. So that's the only thing that I mean, that's one of the things I've heard that I think, how could he possibly have gone there and not
okay,
know
so,
that?
Okay, so I've never heard that story. And again, it's like secondhand, third hand. Like,
right.
You know, here's the deal. On stage at the International UFO Congress 2015, I mean, I went up on stage. I had no idea what they wanted me to talk about up there. Whistleblowers. I was like, okay, let's talk. Sitting next to Stan, you know, who I respect greatly. You know, he's a nice dude. And all of a sudden, I realized, oh, okay, this is what they want me to talk about, right? And so the thing is, I pulled out of Stan for the first time ever. He's been saying for 25 years that Bob Lazar cannot answer the most fundamental scientific or physics-based questions. And I thought that was unbelievably misleading because, I mean, Bob has written the most incredible scientific emails to me, you know, basically, you know, debunking some of my stuff, you know. So it's amazing to me that someone would say that. So I kind of asked Stan, like, have you ever had an in-depth conversation, you know, with Bob Lazar? The answer was no. Stan Friedman has never met Bob Lazar. He's never met him. He mm-hmm. claims to have like a conversation for like a minute. Now, look, this is very different than a man like George Knapp, who spent 25 years communicating and trying to get to the bottom of this. So, I just kind of felt disillusioned. That was a huge moment for me. That was like, I realized on stage that what we were being told by an authority within the UFO world was based upon third-hand knowledge. He admitted on stage that he came up with that idea that Bob couldn't answer basic scientific questions because, you know, he heard from somebody that when they were running a radio show, that there was a scientist kind of hidden on the telephone listening. And that person on the radio asked afterwards to that scientist person, is he a real scientist? And that person said, let me just say he's not going to have his day job tomorrow. I mean, just look at the debate or whatever you want to call it. It was a huge moment. I just realized it's all hearsay. You know, look, bottom line is believe Bob or don't believe Bob. I don't think he cares. What's more important is what did he say? And can we entertain the idea, possibly the outlandish idea, that Bob is telling us the truth? So I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Well, what I said is this, you know, very similar, because it's like either I was told that at a conference or something, but I don't, you know, I looked before this show tonight, I looked online to see if I could find anything about that, and I found nothing.
Okay, so let's get to the crux of the matter, like with Stan, okay? I am not actively trying to figure out if Bob went to MIT. I actually don't care what girl he dated. I don't care what kind of cereal he likes. I want to know, did Bob Lazar work at or somewhere near Area 51 at a subbase called S4 back engineering alien spacecraft or attempting to? That's what I want to know. So the first question I need to do is I need to figure out, did he work at Los Alamos? That could be a beginning to that. If he worked at Los Alamos in a scientific capacity as a physicist, it then makes sense to me that he could possibly be cherry-picked to work on some project out on the Nellis Air Force Base. I mean, that to me has always been key. So if I can prove that, if I can say, yes, he worked at Los Alamos in a scientific capacity as a physicist, then from there I can move forward. Other stuff, like, whatever. I mean, go ahead and find out what cereal he likes or where he went to school. I don't know if it's true. There's no way for me to prove that. What I'm hoping to prove is that he worked at Los Alamos, and it would be great to prove if he worked in some capacity through Nellis.
Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law worked at Los Alamos for years, and my sister
really?
And brother-in-law lived there forever. And
In the 80s,
yep. And I was there back – I was back in Los Alamos visiting, lived with them for almost a year, like in 78, 79, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so I said to my brother-in-law, who loves cars and everything, I said, hey, did you hear about this jet car? And I figured for sure he would know about a jet car in Los Alamos. It's not a huge town. But he didn't know about it. But you can find – there are newspaper clippings.
Give me a break, man. The Los Alamos Monitor. Okay, here's an internal magazine for the scientists that live there. As you said, it's a small community. So you got the Monitor, the Los Alamos Monitor. Front page is Bob Lazar identified as a physicist at Los Alamos with his jet car. You know, look, I've talked to a number of people that knew Bob from Los Alamos. Now, they won't go on the record because they want to stay employed. I won't say that they all won't go on the record because I do have an announcement coming up in June on Coast. But I will say that the majority of people won't go on the record. But what do we have? We have front page of Los Alamos Monitor. Bob Lazar identified as a physicist with a picture of him and his jet car. We have a phone book that George Knapp found, right?
Right.
And the phone book lists Robert Lazar. Now, Stan likes to make this huge deal that it has KM after his name, Kirk Meyer. So, oh, he could have been a janitor hired by Kirk Meyer to, you know, work at Los Alamos. Do you know how ridiculous that is? Almost everybody that works at Los Alamos, as you probably know with your brother, is a subcontractor. I have met dozens and dozens of subcontractors from Los Alamos. So this whole idea of separating, you know, Lazar because he was, you know, hired by Kurt Meyer is absolutely sleight of hand ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's one of these things. I remember having a conversation maybe 4 years ago with someone that's not really in the UFO field, or, you know, they have a curiosity of it. And Bob Lazar's name came up, and we were talking about it. And I said, well, you know, no one can find any, you know, academic records or, you know, there's a lot of puzzling things. And he basically said to me, well, how do you know it wasn't all wiped out when he started talking? You know what I mean? So even people like on the outside of the UFO field are curious as wondering if something like that may have happened. I can't say either way.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't just go ahead. I've done it. Go ahead and just like call up Los Alamos. Ask them who they employ. Go ahead and good luck. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't work like that. And, you know, I have no claim in here, like, you know, that I know he did this or that. I'm just as puzzled by you at certain things. It's just that I'm looking to keep my eye on the prize. If I can find a colleague, if I can prove in some way that other people saw Bob at Los Alamos during that time, I mean, that's what I'm looking to do. Because, you know, I have talked to a number of people who have worked with him there at that time, but they're not willing to go on the record.
Now,
most are not.
By the way, the listener out there, the live listener, you can call in the show if you'd like. And I'm facing three different computers. Sometimes I didn't catch a call the other night till it was too late. It is 603-967-4030 if you'd like to call in. We also have a message board, and I just saw a message up there. I mean, a question up there for you. Oh, yes, I know what it was. Bob Lazar worked at S4 didn't he claim it was only for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it was a short amount of time. Okay, so, I mean, I don't know if your listeners understand the basics of the story, but, you know, look, when he was hired to go out there, there was a period of time when he was getting, you know, confirmed through all of his security clearances. And I'll just say allegedly for the whole thing, like this, you know, you believe what you want to believe. You know, I've had personal confirmation at the highest possible level. I no longer have the luxury of disbelief. But you, the listener, as Bob would say, under the scientific method, you are obligated not to believe him because he cannot, you know, produce evidence that you require. But I personally, let's pretend that I have had evidence, okay? Bob worked out there for a short amount of time. During that time, as he described at the 2015 International UFO Conference, right, or Congress, he described that when he worked out there, it was a process of him getting his proper, you know, certifications or, you know, security clearances. And during that time, they'd bring him out, you know, moment by moment. He never really knew. They'd bring him out. He'd be read into this or that, and he'd start working in little bits of capacity. But then he admitted on stage there were personal problems in his life that caused him to be what they would consider unstable. And he said on stage his wife was cheating on him. And it was actually the people, you know, at the base that were kind of handling him that said, hey, your house is not in order. We've been tapping your phone and we heard about the flight instructor and you got to get your house in order. That's the first time he had ever heard about it. Poor guy.
Did,
you know,
they actually said they were tapping his phone. That's what he claimed.
It's more than that's what he claimed. If you really get into the story with George Knapp, and with John Lear, and with Bob Lazar and Gene Huff, it's undeniable at the time they were listening, they wanted to make sure that his life was stable. Even George Knapp had a number of people that came forward after the Lazar story, six of them specifically, that were going to give him more information and were threatened and backed out. So yes, their phones were tapped. And yes, they were being followed. And yes, they were told by the people who were following them. Later, George Knapp actually met a couple of them. So they were under surveillance. And, you know, look, it was a weird time. They all say that. And, yeah, that's what happened is essentially they were listening in. He had to sign something that said basically everything, you know, that you do is under scrutiny. And they found out about the affair and told him before he knew. It's really sad. He admitted that. I'm not talking out of school. He admitted that on stage if you just watch his lecture from the 2015 International UFO Congress.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get Alejandro to send me that.
Oh, you got to watch it, man. It's epic. Bob Lazar with his black suit and red sneakers. I mean, come on. Guy's got style, you know.
Yeah, I think his looks have actually improved with age. You know, he looks like a real cool gentleman now, you know.
You know, he's a conundrum. I don't claim to, you know, to be his BFF or anything. That would be Gene Huff. But I'd say look, if for what it's worth, which probably for most people not that much, I believe Bob. You know, I've spent time enough on this case, and I've had enough FaceTime and been, you know, I've been in rooms where between him and John Lear and George Knapp and Gene Huff and Bob Lazar, you know, one person didn't know that I was in the room, let's say, and they were talking over the phone and I could hear it on speaker. Like, these guys are not lying. What they claim happened to them happened to them. You know, whether your mind can accept that or not as the listener, that's on you. But for what it's worth, you know, I believe Bob.
Well, you know, I understand that, because when you're in, like, for instance, I've been face to face with Travis Walton many times, and also Jim Wiener, and I don't know if you know, heard of the Allagash incident, but yeah. Also Charlie Fultz. I've talked to these people face to face, and you know, I'm completely hook, line, and sinker. I believe their stories. You know, and I think you have to, if you're facing someone, you're talking to them, and I mean, you have to know if that person is telling the truth. I really believe that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you do your best. I mean, you know, the whole thing, I do all my interviews in person. I vet people to the core. You know, for example, just to give you an example, there's a couple whistleblowers that have come to me, alleged whistleblowers. And, you know, one of them, I just straight up didn't believe. So I spent an entire weekend, you know, doing this filming with a prominent investigator, you know, putting them on film. I never let a frame of that footage, you know, come to light because, frankly, I just didn't believe him. And it's no big secret. Mm-hmm. I told Alejandro on stage, you know, who it was. But the point is that, you know, as an investigator, and if, you know, I'm a self-proclaimed investigator. I just, like, basically, you know, I found myself in a position where I've had great access, and I've been, you know, my camera has been my passport into the mysteries of the universe. It's very exciting. But basically, you have to vet your sources. And if you think they're talking a whole bunch of BS, then it is your duty to not put that out into the world or to give them any, you know, energy that's going to help them, you know, sell their BS, you know, about disclosure or whatever it is that they're trying to sell you based on fear. It's your job not to help propagate that BS. And
I agree.
Yeah, that's how I feel, man.
Well, you know, I've had a few people on the show, like in the middle of the show, all of a sudden, I'm not feeling it. Yeah. And all I can do is you know, maybe question or two, and then, you know, let the listener make up their own mind. But if you think my listeners are going to let you say what you just did and not say who that person is.
Oh, my gosh, you're calling me out there. Okay, look. All I'm saying is this. I'm just saying that you know, people need to use their rational mind. You know, do not support people that prey upon your fear. The whole thing is that, you know, I personally believe, like, you know, that my partner, Ruben Langdon, he was the unsung hero of the citizen hearing. Ruben Langdon was the reason, you know, as far as a, you know, production standpoint, that all happened. And as you probably know, like, so Ruben and I have been fighting to get really high quality edited versions of the citizen hearing testimony out to the public as best we can. It's been an uphill fight, and but we've done it, man. We have done it. You know, if you go to citizenhearing.org, you will be able to see all of the testimony in HD with multiple cameras, and it's done. It's beautiful. It took an army to get that done. You know, don't get me wrong. It took everybody to get that done. But Ruben Langdon is the unsung hero, and we are proud to announce that you can go and watch the entire testimony now for a very reasonable price. And every dollar that comes into that, we haven't gotten paid in years, you know. The whole point is that we're going to, you know, put out a documentary film about, you know, some of the primary investigators within this field. So that's the bottom line. It doesn't matter about other people. It doesn't matter about, you know, what people think about disclosure. You know, acknowledgement is here, man. And if you just listen to the testimony and you just watch the 40 hours or 30 hours, whatever it is, of testimony, you will be influenced and you will be better educated. And that's the point. So it's not about bad mouthing anybody. It's about getting information out there.
I think it was just yesterday or the day before I got that email that the DVDs were ready. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've been ready. Yeah, so that's right. So the actual physical DVDs, we have a limited edition. We had to print those because that's kind of was our original campaign, was that we were going to deliver these DVDs to people. And yes, absolutely. You can buy the physical DVDs online. But we also made it available streaming, which, you know, is really the future. Everybody can just watch it on their iPhone, watch it on their computer at their leisure. But yes, we also do have physical copies that we can now mail out to people. And man, I mean, we're still in the red. It was difficult to do all this, and I don't want to bore you with those details, but the success moment right now is that the average, typical, everyday person that is interested to learn more can hear testimony from astronauts, people within the FAA, former military, former police, former intelligence, and you can hear them stand up in front of five congressional members or ex-congressional members and one senator, Senator Gravel, and you can hear their testimony under oath. I mean, it is a powerful thing.
The message board, there's a question. Are these the exact same DVDs that were sent to the, you know, the congressional people recently?
These
are 500 of them sent out, I believe, or something.
These are actually way higher quality. Those were a kind of rush job that were actually I had no hand in that. Neither did my partner, Ruben Langdon. That was unfortunate. We were so close to having these professionally edited pieces done. So what you will be receiving in these like online – And also we have in full Spanish translation, by the way. There's another whole set online. But what you will be receiving in these night sessions and in these testimonies are professionally edited, beautiful copies that, again, the unsung hero, Ruben Langdon, made sure were perfect.
Wow. Now, in hour two, I want to talk a little bit about, I think it's called Patient 17.
Yeah, that's the film, baby.
Yeah, that coming up. But and that has Roger Lear. I got to see that sneak preview of that out in Phoenix. But speaking of the name Lear, a whole different spelling.
Yeah.
Have you met John? You've met John Lear, obviously.
Oh, man, have I met John Lear? Okay, so we're not on the same page here. Okay, check it out. So how this all started for me, I told you, was kind of hearing, you know, the Lazar, you know, Lear, Knapp. Okay, So the very first frame of film that I ever filmed as a filmmaker, I went out after 3 years trying to get a hold of John Lear. Finally, he called me back, and he's like, Jeremy, I hear you've been trying to get a hold of me. And I'm thinking, yeah, I've had intelligence officers. I've had people call you from every – why haven't you called me back? It was incredible. So he's like, all right, come on over. So I come over to his house, and I mean, this was like 5 years ago or something, and I was like, I want to make a film on you, John. I want to hear what you have to say. I want proof of the, you know, extraterrestrial visitors, you know. And I sit down in his house and I look at him. And for 3 days, I mean, the dude was like silent. He'd look at me. It was like I was staring down the barrel of his cigar, you know. He would like – he wouldn't even acknowledge me unless I asked a question. If my question was stupid, he'd just look at me like, your question was stupid, you know. And it was like the most unnerving thing, you know. This guy like flew for the CIA and like, you know, I kind of – you know, he had some wild theories. And I was a jiu-jitsu fighter. I mean, I wasn't like super scared, but it was like, you know, intimidating. And I – so basically, that was my intro into ufology, is, you know, the godfather of conspiracy, John Lear. So I'm happy to report that I love him like a grandfather, you know, that we've become, you know, good friends on a good day. Sometimes he gets super pissed at me because he feels I don't agree with everything he agrees with. But I love the guy. And man, does he have some powerful theories. And although I don't, you know, subscribe to all of them, the things I have been able to validate of what he has said, I mean, wow, what an incredible, enlightening experience to know John Lear. I have been making a film on John Lear called Immaculate Deception, which is far beyond a film now. Essentially, it is an archive of a man's aim and life. And you know, he's a pioneer, you know, he is a cowboy, he is a renegade. And I feel like I've captured that over these maybe about 5 years now of filming. And I've decided, instead of doing just a short, you know, instead of like a normal film, Immaculate mm-hmm. Deception, I'm going to release a series of pieces on John, because I find him to be one of the most intriguing humans on the planet.
Now, did I see something on YouTube that you filmed with him in his basement or something?
You may. There's a little things slip out here and there, but I've got. I basically at the UFO Congress, when I gave a presentation just before George Knapp and Bob, I did premiere for the first time ever the trailer, or the teaser, I'd say, for the work that I've been doing with John Lear. So that a little bit of that has kind of snuck out onto the web, but you will be seeing a lot more very soon.
Okay. I had him on the show, a couple of years ago, and it was really funny because we set a time and everything, and I want to say it was a landmark birthday the day after that. He was extremely hungover, and and he's like – he kept like stumbling, and I think at the time I was doing some I was doing the podcast only, so I was able to edit, and I kept telling him, don't worry, I'll edit it out.
Well, let's you know, just to get clear, John doesn't drink. Since the moment that I've known him about 5 years ago, he hasn't had a drop of alcohol. So most likely what you were experiencing was that John has, you know, pain from time to time. John, you know, look, when he was 16 years old, he crashed an airplane and broke almost every bone in his body.
Wow.
I mean, he was not supposed to survive. You know, he was saved somehow. So, you know, this man has been through more than you or I probably he's got grit. We'll just put it that way. So sometimes with his health, you know, he's 100% there and he's on. Other times he's not, but what you experienced definitely was not alcohol. You know,
okay, well, that was wrong for me to say that, but something he did tell me that he was up most of the night or something, he told me that he was, like, exhausted, you know?
Yeah, well, probably he was researching. I mean, John is a very, very active researcher. With every ounce that he has, he puts in, and just one more time, kind of in John's defense, although I do not agree, again, with all of the things that he says, just because I can't validate them. But what I will say is that, you know, I have been in his presence when people travel across the United States or further internationally just to have audience with him. And he has been privy to information that you or I will never be privy to. I mean, it's amazing. The people that just like show up on his doorstep and want to tell him, oh, it's amazing. And I was able to film that over these years. And once in a while, you know, you kind of get a glimpse into the world he lives in. And man, I mean, he's tireless.
Wow. Now, his father, Bill Lear, I guess it is, inventor of the Learjet. And this is a question I never asked him when I was talking to him, but do you happen to know if he had any thoughts on UFOs? Did you ever ask him that?
Yeah, well, I probably asked, you know, John Lear every question under the rainbow at this point. You know, I mean, I've spent many a night at his home trying to understand the man and his philosophies. So, yes, I have. Now, you know, Bill Lear, John's father, was the inventor of the Learjet, as we know. You know, by the way, his company was what is now known as Motorola, because it was the 8-track stereo also that he invented. So, wow. Like... Yeah, so Bill Lear was an incredible guy. Now, John will admit that, you know, Bill, his father and himself, they didn't get along. You know, they didn't get along in a lot of ways. But that question of if Bill Lear had anything to do with ufology, well, it was late in John's life when he found out that, in fact, Bill was one of the primary contractors working on anti-gravity and that sort of stuff. So as the story goes, his father actually was in some way connected to the, gravitational experimentation within aerospace.
That's it, everyone, for hour one. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to support the show and hear hour two, Jeremy and I get into an interesting discussion about his upcoming films and people that he's interviewed. And it's a great second part of the show. You can support us for only $1 a month or more. You can get that information on podcastufo.com right on the sidebar. I want to thank a few people for helping out today. Alejandro Rojas with the news, Peggy Shunning for helping us with Facebook. Remember, you can like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. We have Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse on the music, and we also have Bruce Rainier that helped us out tonight. And I want to thank our guest, Jeremy Corbell. You can go to his website, extraordinarybeliefs.com. I thought it was an interesting interview. Thank you all very much for listening. And we'll be back next week. Remember, you can listen to the whole show for free on Dark Matter Radio Network, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks again, everyone. And remember, keep your eyes to the sky.